Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With me today as co-host is Chris Rossini. Chris, welcome to the program. Good. We came across an article that we've talked a little bit, and we want to take it to our viewers. And that has to do with Bernie Sanders offering some legislation this week. And everybody knows who Bernie Sanders is now. He was a famous candidate for president. He advertised the fact he's a socialist. Sometimes there's extreme socialist fanatics that are very authoritarian. And I think Bernie would deny that, but he still claims himself a socialist, so he's much more willing and anxious for government to do more than we certainly would be. But his introduction of a bill this week has to do with breaking up the big banks. And if you look at it on the surface, you say, well, maybe we should. Those banks are huge, and they get a lot of benefits, and we can describe those benefits that they get. But he doesn't deal with why they're big. It's the bigness per se that bothers him. And for a free market person, bigness is not necessarily bad. If they're not cheating or not getting the taxpayer ripped off and getting all these benefits and getting contracts and all these other things. So there's a big difference. So we who believe in the market doesn't say, you're big, we have to break you up. And that is usually motivated by greed and power, and they think people shouldn't have too much and they want to redistribute the wealth. But this is something different. This is bigness, and it seems like a very calm and serious discussion with an individual like Bernie, he could maybe be persuaded and say, go after the things that causes the bigness, rather than saying bigness is bad and what we're going to do is write more regulation. Chris, I don't believe that's the answer to the problems that we're facing today in the banking system. I don't think we can solve this problem without addressing the subject of the Federal Reserve.
Yes, I agree, Dr. Paul. And the first question that pops into my mind is, how on earth does Senator Sanders know how big a company should be? Or how would government know, or anybody? How do you know how big is too big? It would have to be totally arbitrary. And if let's say we forget finance and Wall Street, what if they tried to cap another company, like an automaker or somebody makes hamburgers? We're going to say, that's enough. I know people want your burgers, but you're too big. So it's all arbitrary. And we're talking about the biggest, ironically, the biggest government in the history of the world. The America's founders did not create something that they thought would become a monstrous government. So perhaps, Dr. Paul, that's what should be kept.
Yeah, I think we need to break up this big government. But, you know, this whole subject of how big should it be, and you indicate there's no way that he can know. There's no way anybody can know, but the market can decide. That's the same question about how does the Fed and a few people in a secret room decide, oh, today where interest rates are going to be this and they're going to go up and down, and they're pretending they know what the money supply should be and what the interest rate should be. They don't know, and that's why we get into bubbles and crashes and all the kind of things and inflation and deflation and a lot of problems. But the whole idea of bigness, though, is interesting because the market will tell us how big something should be. If you argue from the purity of a free market, bigness would be rewarded by providing a service. And guess who would be in charge? It'd be the consumer. The consumer becomes the king. And if the consumer doesn't vote for that company because they believe the price is right and the quality is right, guess what? That company has to go bankrupt. They have to get out of the way, and there'll be competition. So the regulations are rather vigorous in a free market, which is something that a lot of those on the left never even think about.
Yeah, and the issue with Wall Street is their relationship to government. The reason they were bailed out and they rip off the taxpayers is because they're intimately tied with the government and the military-industrial complex. That's the problem. And until that relationship is severed, the problem is going to continue. Now, most people will think, well, that'll never be severed. But that I wouldn't say that. You know, there was a time when theocracy was the thing, and the king was their god. And I'm sure people at that time thought that, my gosh, theocracy, this is forever. But that's not the way life works. Just because something is a way today does not mean that it'll remain that way tomorrow.
Well, we don't have to deal with the king, but we deal with a power equivalent to the king, and that is the adherence to Keynesian economics and what our colleges have taught for a long time and what the members of Congress believe, because they believe in inflationism and death, and they believe in government regulations to, you know, smooth things out. So the Fed creates a lot of problems by issuing this currency at low rates, and then the problems develop. And the left and many conservatives believe what we need to do is smooth things out with regulation. And I think about what happened in the Depression. That was, you know, a major development from the Federal Reserve, you know, the inflation and the deflation. And so we introduced more regulations, the SEC. And then I remember when, Enron failed, we ended up passing more regulations, lack of regulation, more regulation. What we did was we passed Sarbanes-Oxley. And then we come along more recently with the major crash, and we get Dodd-Frank. Huge amount of regulations, trying to tinker, maybe well motivated, but it just doesn't work. You can't take the monstrous errors made by the Federal Reserve and the artificial system and say, well, we'll regulate it and smooth things out. We need to market the intelligence of the market to iron this out. But then you have the monetary mischief that caused the trouble, but then you have the Congress coming in and writing other rules. You take for the high housing bubble, not only was it the easy credit that caused the problem, but it was also, you know, the fact that HUD existed and there were certain rules, and you had Community Reinvestment Act telling people, well, you have to make loans here and benefit certain groups. So they're in social engineering with these problems. And then you have these distortions. And the one thing that they should listen to is, well, if it is fragile and you want things to happen, don't we have to help them when it happens? Well, we want to prevent it is what we do. But what had happened after this last crash? You know, there were a lot of people who lost their jobs and lost their houses and still suffer from these consequences. In spite of the big boom, there's still a lot of people that, you know, have not fully recovered from the last recession, and they're not even counted anymore. So it boosts the numbers, and the numbers look better, and there's more people out in the street than ever before. So it's something that they should look at, that, you know, the mistakes are made by the regulations and by the inflation, but actually the guaranteed bailout, the insurance that we provide, is a moral hazard and causes the bank and causes individuals to make more mistakes. You know, this whole thing, you take another program that is part of this system, and that is the student loan, $1.3 trillion. Well, that didn't come from savings. When I was in college, there were some people that had to borrow money, and it was available and was low interest, and people did it and they worked it off. But it was market oriented; it had to come from somebody's saving. But when it comes from a printing press or a computer out of the Federal Reserve, then there's this tendency to overdo things, and now we have this monstrous debt staring at us now. Another one that has been recently pointed out is the amount of debt that has accumulated because we have flood insurance and guarantee that there's any kind of an emergency, the taxpayer will bail them out. And therefore, people are encouraged to make mistakes, you know, the flood insurance, people build in the wrong places and these sort of things. But there's like $1 trillion of unfunded liabilities in that insurance program. So all these guarantees, whether it's the pension funds in the communities in the states or the Social Security, is all guaranteed by an unfunded liability by a deeply flawed monetary system. And people don't want to think about this because they don't want to tinker with it because there are some benefits. The banks don't want to tinker with it. Look, they get the money first. They get real low interest rates. And the margin that they've been able to take near zero interest rates and loan it out again has been very good. So the banks have done quite well. And that's one of the reasons they're very big. And one of the reasons what we should be emphatic about trying to get people to understand that this system doesn't work, it has failed, and that we have to try something else. But you know, Chris, one other thing that people argue against us on, they say, Yeah, then there's no regulation. You mean just people do whatever they want? Wouldn't this make it much worse? Well, I think you know that things don't get much worse because the market provides a lot of regulations as well.
Oh, the market is the toughest regulator, which is why politicians don't like it. And businessmen, big business, do not like it. They'd much rather work with government and they make their own regulations. And I remember maybe it was a year or two ago, I read that there were already in the financial industry 48,000 regulations. So regulations are not going to solve anything. And Senator Sanders is incorrect to think that breaking up the big banks would prevent financial crisis or further bailouts. They would do no such thing. Because right now there is no free market in banking. This is one system. You could picture it like an octopus with the head being the Federal Reserve and all the banks are its appendages. So regardless of whether they're big or small, we still do not have sound money. We have fractional reserves. They create money out of thin air, which creates booms and busts and distortions in the economy. So breaking up the big banks may superficially look good and make people feel good, but it will not solve the problem, like you say, Dr. Paul, which is the monetary system that we have.
Yeah, and Chris, at the beginning, you mentioned the fact that we will be talking about bigness in banks and this legislation, but you also mentioned that why might they not want to apply it to other industries, which they do, because bigness is bad automatically for somebody who believes in social redistribution. So they will do that. They do it. There is always try to be a hindrance. But what motivates the socialists to do this? I find it interesting that usually it's to want to curtail greed and avarice. People are bad people because, they have a business and they save money and they build a house and they take care of themselves and they pay all their own bills, but they have too much. Their house is bigger than my house. So therefore we have to equalize this. We have to have equality should be the goal. And they don't even ask the question of how did they get rich? Did they get the benefits from government? And have they had the guarantee? And have they accomplished very little except get the benefits from government? But, the greed issue, I think, is an interesting thing to think about. Because if an individual or a company gets very big by doing everything honestly, providing a good service, and the consumer, buys their product, you don't really have to get involved with altruism and whether or not the person doing this is willing to donate the services. I think most of them would, and that'd be okay, but that's irrelevant. The service that the businessman provides in the marketplace and benefits the consumer is the most important thing. But then he has more wealth. But then the socialist comes along and says, well, it's not equal and we have to do this. So they say, you're too greedy. So they come in and they pass the law and the tax laws for redistribution or redistribution through the financial banking system. So they take the wealth that is honestly earned and give it to the government. But that's not called greed. Greed is only when you spend your own money. But when the government takes it from us illegally under force, and they spend it, they say, that's humanitarian. It's only the socialists that know what humanitarianism is all about, which is a farce. But I happen to have a firm belief that in a free society with a great prosperity, there is going to be a lot of humanitarian instincts and people being taken care of, because it did exist to a much greater extent in our earlier history. You know, the great hospitals and great colleges were built with private funds, but now the hospitals are controlled by the government. Our educational institution is just an arm of the government to preach big government. So, but I think it's this idea of understanding greed, and that it's a word that captures some emotions, but we should apply the word greed to the ones who are taking honestly earned dollars, who have contributed something to society, and not let them get away with just bad mouthing the whole idea of somebody doing well in the marketplace. I think that would go a long way to softening this attack, because it takes a lot of effort to use just common sense and say it isn't working. You would think by now, after the 20th century that collectivism, this ruthless type of socialism and wealth redistribution, should be enough to convince people why in the world would anybody consider it, because it didn't accomplish any wealth accumulation. It murdered millions of people. And here we are still talking about how can we, play it out where people will tolerate it, but we still need the people who are so smart to know. And Chris, you pointed out, how do they know? How do they know how big a corporation should be? I'll tell you what, the managers of a socialist system, they don't know what to make, and they don't know how much to make it, and they don't know what it costs, and therefore it doesn't work. And in a way, a portion of our society is that. So much of our financial system, it doesn't allow, the market to price these things, and that's why there's this huge amount of debt. And that is why, in spite of the great news that we're hearing today and things are improving, it also, something they ignore is, we had to borrow a lot of money. We just borrowed another $1.2 trillion to keep this thing going along, and there's no end in sight. That's going to continue and expand until the whole thing falls apart.
Yes, I'll close, Dr. Paul. Hopefully our viewers, we're dealing with the root here. We want to get at the root and not worry about superficial stuff just to feel good about it. And things can change quickly. You mentioned the Soviet Union. I remember reading Lech Walesa said, 5 years before it collapsed, he met with people all over the world. And he said not one person could have ever dreamed that 5 years later it would be totally gone. So we live in a world today where it's a military industrial complex / Wall Street, and it seems like it's forever. But if history is a guide, it's not forever. And hopefully the ideas that we're trying to get across help change the world for the better.
That is very much on target there. And I think what we have to realize what's going on now, there's not less enthusiasm for government planners. I think they're taking socialism, which is a vicious philosophy, and collectivism, trying to put a smile on it and say it's humanitarian. And the people who believe in freedom are the ones who are not humanitarian. And yet the evidence is so clear that if you care about people, if you care about a big middle class, if you care about prosperity, if you care about a chance to work for excellence and virtue, it has to be in a free society. And right now, those ideas are alive and well, and they're being promoted, and they're in both political parties, and yet, there's no evidence that they're going to work long term. You just can't say, we can take care of everybody if we just have enough debt, and if we just get the computers running fast enough and distribute the money more fairly. And if it gets out of whack, write more regulation. It won't work, hasn't ever worked. And it is quite possible that many people who are promoting those ideas that we find completely wrong are well motivated. And they say, well, we're trying to get rid of the militancy of fascism. But I tell you what, the economic factors are based on force and violence, and it can't work any better, and because indirectly it is all based with a gun. I talked about the greed, taking money from a producer and giving it to a non-producer. That's with a gun. That's with the gun of the IRS. And if you don't cough up, you're in big government. So there are guns out there running this show, but they'd like to be less visible. But unfortunately, what we have to face and try to warn people about is the system that we have now, and the protectionism that is going on in the weak spots frequently brings about a lot more guns. And that, of course, is what we have to work hard to prevent, because so often economic intervention leads to very hot and nasty wars. So the answer is clearly free markets and sound money, personal liberty, and that is the road to peace and prosperity. That is our goal. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Please come back soon.